Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are talking about all things Advent today. Actually, today is going to be kind of our A day. We're going to talk about two things. We're talking about Advent and adoption. So stay tuned for a really great story that we have from our guest. Our guest today is Jeff Land. He is the children's pastor at Sugar Creek Baptist Church in Sugar Land, Texas, a really sweet place to be, if I do say so myself. Jeff previously served with Lifeway Kids, developing content and serving churches for several years. Now, he and his wife, Abby, are in the Four Kids Club. That's what I call it, but they have four sons. So somehow I feel like they have a little more street cred than I do. You know, I have two girls and two boys. And when I had my girls, I thought, you know, this mom thing is not too hard. And then the Lord saw fit to humble me because I realized I wasn't so much as a good mom as I was a little girl mom. And then my boys gave me a run for my money. I love them, love them, love them, even with all of their rambunctious energy. But Jeff and Abby have authored multiple books together. And the book we're going to talk about today is called The Way to the Manger. This is a family Advent devotional, and it's written, co-written by Jeff and his wife, Abby. Now, I ordered this book. I have it right here in front of me, and it is a beautiful keepsake of a book. It's hardcover. It has a beautiful jacket on it, and it is a memory maker. Now, I absolutely love making memories, and I'll talk to you in a little bit about some of the science that is involved in relationship building through memory making. But without further ado, Jeff, welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are so excited to talk with you today.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Jeff, why don't you start out just telling us a little bit about who you are, how you met the Lord, and ended up in ministry?
Sure. I am from Mississippi, as you can probably hear in my accent.
And No judgment from this Texas girl.
I'm proud of my Southern accent. I was born in Mississippi, was raised there, and was raised in church, just like a typical, very church family. We went Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and if we found out the doors were open, we were there. And so I was always just very much involved in the church. And at 7 years old, I actually was watching my dad take communion, and I was like, I wonder why I don't get to do that. And my dad, after that, took me home, and he told me about the importance of communion and all that, and I said, I want that for my life. And so that's the day I became a Christian. I was going through life pretty normal. I was not ever a rebellious person. I don't have one of those rebellious testimonies, but I do have a testimony that God can save you from many things, including just anxiety and just self-doubt and poor self-esteem. God's always there for you, and he's always been there for me. I went to Mississippi College and met my wife there, and we've been married for 23 years now, 22 years. Next year's 23, and we have our four boys, and I ended up in ministry, though, really thinking, I thought I was going to be a doctor growing up, and got to college at Mississippi College, and actually I really didn't like biology, and I hated chemistry, mm-hmm. and so I quickly realized that maybe my desire to be a doctor had more to do with the stature or just the good name of being a doctor, more so than really wanting to be a doctor. So I actually switched my major to social work and found that I love helping people. I love connecting people with resources. And so I was going, after my wife and I got married, I was working in Mississippi and realized that I was really called to ministry. And so we moved to Texas, to Southwestern Seminary, and quickly I found that I love children's ministry. And so we have done that for years together, and we lived in Tennessee for about 15 years where we did children's ministry, and I worked at Lifeway producing curriculum. And then about 5 years ago, we moved here, and it's just been a great thing. We love Texas. We love living here in Sugarland and getting to minister to our families at Sugar Creek.
We've got good food, don't we? I mean, we have the best queso ever. I mean, I'm sorry, but those are fighting words, but it's true. But Jeff, there's a couple of things that you said that are funny because they are similar to my story. I love that you came to know the Lord through your dad modeling his faith, not from him telling you, you know, okay, this is what you do, but you just saw that as a natural expression. And I love that. I have a similar story with watching my grandmother. The second thing that we have in common is I also did not have a rebellious bone in my body. I was a rule follower. I was, you know, I had an opposite problem of trying to be perfect. And it struck me when you said that, you know, God can save you and you don't have to have, you know, that big story. Praise the Lord for that. Honestly, that you don't have the scars to tell, although God can use those so in such a powerful way. But I think that, you know, what God saved me from was a mediocre life. Like I would have just had a mediocre life, but his story and the journey that he's taking me on is so much better than that. And the third thing that we have in common is that we love kids, clearly, professionally, personally, like taking that all the way. I love that. And I think, Jeff, there's no better time to be in children's ministry than now, because families are facing things that they haven't had to face before. And I think that's so amplified by COVID. So what does children's ministry look like for you right now? Like what kind of families are you serving? Where's your heartbeat? What's your passion? What does that look like?
One of the things that I love so much about our church is that we are a very, very diverse church. We have over 92 nationalities here on any given Sunday. So to me, our church is like looking at heaven, or what I imagine heaven to look like. You see all the colors of faces, and it's just beautiful. With that, though, for me, that we are very culturally conscious, and we're very aware of things that happen in the world politically and racially, and how we can minister to kids and families and show them how. At our church, our motto is love and lead all people to life-changing Christ, and we try to walk that and believe that in the way that we treat each other. And I see that so much even in my boys' life, of just how important it is that we love people. And so a lot of what our focus is has just been loving people, taking care of people. And a big thing that we see, though, is just the level of unchurchedness of parents. And parents seem to be wanting their kids to have something more than they had. And so they've started bringing their kids to church, but they really don't know how to disciple them. And so we like to come alongside them and help them in that journey and help them in that process.
Well, praise the Lord for that, because let me tell you, the parents, I need all the help that I can get. And I think it's so important to have people who are walking alongside you, who are reinforcing the things that you're trying to teach at home and showing them that there's a community. There's other people who have the same faith, who have the same values, even though they may have different cultures. That is the uniting thing between us all. And I love that. And one of the things that you've done, as I talked about at the top of the show, is help families to create the tradition of Advent. Now, I want to digress for a minute here and just give a shout out for traditions, especially faith traditions. Let me give the listening audience some information on the science of this. This is research-based, that traditions actually reinforce your family's values more than any other thing, because they create a sense of emotional connection. They create a sense of belonging. Traditions provide provide a source of identity. So you feel like, you know, this is us. This is what we do. This is who we are. Like, we're the Peck family and we always do this on Christmas. We are always, one of my favorite traditions is Christmas Eve service. I mean, I know it's cliche, but you start singing Silent Night and have those candles, I'm going to have tears in my eyes like every single time. I love it. Traditions also help families bond closer together, and it's a great way to build intergenerational bonds too with extended family, because you're all doing that same thing together. Traditions make sure that they strengthen emotional connections. This is really fascinating if you look at it, because if kids feel close to their family and they feel a sense of positivity, they're going to mimic those behaviors. So that's another reason I'm just such a fan of faith traditions. And they provide lasting memories and provide our kids with security. They can be, these regular rituals and traditions can provide children with comfort in the middle of turmoil. So maybe a family's going through divorce, or they're moving, or they've lost a loved one. Having those traditions, especially at the holiday time, can really be healing and help to promote resilience. And lastly, Jeff, I think traditions are a chance to celebrate whatever makes your family unique. So, you know, knowing that, you know, there are some traditions that I look at with other families and I think, man, that is just kind of strange. Like, I've never heard of that tradition, but they love it. You know, they're so enthusiastic, which is great, because I have the same weird traditions, you know, that we do and my kids know mm-hmm. that we're going to do. So your tradition that you've written this book about, The Way to the Manger, is Advent. So let's start at the beginning. Jeff, what is Advent for people who maybe think, you know, I've heard of that, but I don't know if I could really say what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Advent is really something that's more known about in more liturgical churches, Episcopal, Catholic, Presbyterian, Methodist churches. And we actually just always celebrated it. Growing up, my mom had an Advent Jesse tree, and we would make little ornaments for it every year. And my wife and I, we just felt really called to teach our kids more than just the story of Jesus, but the full story of his life, and then that he's died and he's coming back again. And so Advent actually starts with the birth of Jesus and moves through the looking forward to his return. And so by doing that, we wanted to take the focus off the gifts, take the focus off the chaos of Christmas, and try to make sure our kids were grounded in knowing how the Bible would tell us to approach Christmas.
And so it's in 4 weeks, right? And it's not too late mm-hmm. to start. Right. If you haven't started, it's 4 weeks. And those weeks are hope, love, joy, peace. How does your book mm-hmm. help to celebrate that and help families to walk through that Advent process?
Well, in each of the devotions in the days, there are actually some questions that we suggest that you have family questions. And it's you called it a keepsake book, and that was really our desire, is that this would be a book that was beautiful enough to leave out on your coffee table, that people would want to thumb through, but also that you could write notes about what your kids say. And so, like with hope, maybe one of the questions is, what is one of your hopes for Christmas? And you write it down. And so that way you can see how your kids progress through the years. Maybe 1 year their hope is for a toy truck, and then soon they're hoping for a cell phone. And then as they get older, even if you kept continuing it, maybe they were hoping for a Christian wife or something. And so we wanted to be able to help families record memories of what their traditions are and to see how their kids are growing and developing.
Well, you know, my kids are older, but I am going to have them do this. And I can tell you that my children, for a while, they did not even dare to hope for a cell phone. They just hoped it wouldn't be a flip phone, because that's what I started my kids out on. They're like, please, please, for Christmas, can I not get a flip phone? Because you don't know the pain of texting, you know, 7776 or whatever that is. Well, we are talking with Jeff Land about Advent. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about children's ministry and how you can do Advent at home. And we're going to get into Jeff's amazing story of adoption on this last day of Adoption Awareness Month. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. On our A-game show today, we're talking about Advent and adoption. We've been chatting with Jeff Land, who is a children's pastor at Sugar Creek Baptist Church in Sugarland, Texas. And he and his wife, Abby, are the authors of an beautiful, beautiful keepsake family Advent book called The Way to the Manger, a family Advent devotional. Now, Jeff, before the break, we were talking about what Advent is, and you spoke about it being, you know, historically or traditionally more liturgical and that kind of thing. And, you know, I read a study talking about how sometimes I think we do a disservice in a way of making church seem like so many other venues where church seems similar to maybe a rock concert that kids went to, and how the younger generation of kids, they're actually very attracted to these liturgical elements, you know, the candlelight and the more formal expressions of holiday or faith or worship, because they seem different. And so I love that you have done that. Now, Jeff, if people start using this book, it's so beautiful. Like I said, it's such a beautiful book. And I think sometimes as parents, we just put this unfair pressure on ourselves that our time together, our worship time, our devotional time has to be equally as beautiful. And Jeff, you have four boys. I have four kids. It's not perfect. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to pinch someone else. Like food is going to come out. Like somebody's going to get restless. Somebody's going to get in trouble. What do you say to families who get discouraged by that?
I would totally encourage you just to try to start it. I don't think there's been a single year that we've made it through the whole every day of it without skipping a day or missing a day. I think that you parents do put too much pressure on it. But if you're not doing anything right now, and you start doing this one thing, then you can add to it. Or if you're doing sort of an okay job of teaching your kids about the Bible, we'll add another thing to it. Just try to continually to improve it, but don't pressure yourself. Be happy with it and have fun with it. You can do it at breakfast. You can read the book at night at the supper table. For us, that seems to work best, is to do it at a mealtime, because the boys are sitting there and we can ask them questions and do it that way. So just make it work for your schedule, but don't get overly pressured into it.
I completely agree. And sometimes, you know, you can just feel like such a failure. And then what happens is we get on our social media and we see other families posting a picture of a beautiful Advent time. And you don't know that behind the scenes, they're saying all the same things we are, like, stop touching your sister, you know, stop, just sit still. And then they post it and Advent time, like, it's so beautiful. That's a myth. That's not there. And I remember embracing this when my kids were little. Like, I tried to get everybody dressed in matching Christmas clothes, and we went to go take the picture. My son, they sat him up on this little fence, and it showed both of his socks, which were not matching superhero socks. Like, and I just thought, you know, I'm going to embrace that as this is representative of my life, which is true. Well, Jeff, one of the other things that you do for your children's ministry that I think is so fun is that you produce a daily podcast. It's a really short little daily podcast that's designed for kids. It's just a minute or two long. And so we're actually going to play one. Jeff here at American Family Radio, who is my board operator, he is going to play your podcast. And this one is from November 30th, but 2 years ago. Let's take a listen and see what you have.
I Hi, kids. It's Pastor Jeff, and this is the Beautiful Day Podcast on Tuesday, November 30th. Have you ever been to a parade? Maybe a homecoming, Thanksgiving, or Christmas parade? Well, think about that, because I'm going to tell a little story about it. Hosea 12:10 said, "I spoke to the prophets, gave them many visions, and told them parables through them. The sounds and colors that you hear this season help you know that Christmas is coming, and many people participate and cheer up. A parade helps people get in the spirit of the season." But when God sent his son to the world, he didn't use parades or promotions, only prophets. God promised to send the world's great and only remedy for sin. Through the prophets, God encouraged the world to watch, wait, and believe in the salvation through Jesus Christ. Salvation was always the plan, God's plan. What are your plans for Christmas? Is your focus on decorating and shopping and traveling and entertaining, or is your focus on celebrating the birth of Jesus? Even more than that, how can we bless someone by sharing the good news of Jesus so that they can hear that salvation comes only through Christ? Today, I want you to think about someone you can tell about Jesus's birth and God's plan for salvation through him. Every day this week, remember, I'm going to share something I love to hear when I'm thinking about Christmas. And one of my favorite things to hear at Christmas are Christmas songs. I love the traditional songs like "O Holy Night" and "Hark the Herald Angels Sing" and "Silent Night" and "Away in a Manger." I love to hear those songs, and they remind me that we're celebrating the birth of the King, King Jesus. Dear God, thank you because your prophets spoke the truth of your word, and you gave them visions, and you told them stories to share with us so that we would know how to look for the King. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Bye, kids. I hope you have a beautiful day.
Okay, and I love that because, Jeff, I am a Gen X kid, so I feel like the message may have been for kids, but the music was for parents. Can we just be real about that?
It was. We actually got that idea during COVID. We were trying to figure out a way to reach our kids in our church, and we actually made a whole YouTube channel of me doing videos in sort of the Mr. Rogers style, just helping kids understand that why we're having to wear masks and why we're having to stay 6 feet apart and those types of things, and just to give them ideas of things they could do. But then it turned into this podcast, which we have now recorded, I think, 800 episodes.
Wow.
And it's been such a blessing to do. And we hear from people all over the world and the United States of people who are finding it and listening to it, because it's, for me, with my children, I don't have any in elementary anymore, but when they were in elementary, we would listen to it on the way to school. And I hear about families doing that. And it's just such a good way to get the right focus for the day.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I could picture you doing it before you go to bed, just something simple. And it's a great way to demonstrate that these things do not have to be very complicated. Consistency is the most important thing. So just doing it most days, you know, listening to it. Although I would be remiss if I did not say that even though I love Mr. Rogers, and that's so good, my kids who are, you know, Gen Z and teenagers now, they looked this up after I told them this show was so amazing. And they're like, "Mom, did you ever watch this show? Like, have you seen Lady Elaine Fairchild? She is terrifying." That's what they thought. I thought, you just don't understand. You don't understand.
Right,
I'll
right.
stick with my Gen X friends. But, you know, so I encourage listeners to participate in Advent however you want to do that, however you want to have a tradition. The Way to the Manger, a family Advent devotional. Now, as I said, Jeff, you wrote this with your wife, Abby, and you and Abby have had not only this Advent adventure, you have had a big adoption adventure. And you, well, I'm just going to let you take it from there. Tell us about your adoption adventure, Jeff.
Well, we decided that we wanted to have children when we were, and we had been married about 4 years. We decided that was when we were going to start to have children. And immediately, God blessed us with a pregnancy. But unfortunately, My wife, we lost that baby to miscarriage. And so we continued on that process and nothing was happening. And so we began to see a fertility specialist and we made some headway. She did have another pregnancy, but it also ended in miscarriage. And so then we did some testing. We found out that it's just probably it wasn't in the cards really for our family. And we were never against adoption. We always knew that we would want to adopt, but we thought we would have a biological child first. But God showed us otherwise. And so we quickly found adoption. And I mean, it was just, we went to the doctor's visit and they kind of said, y'all are really the definition of infertility. And that we're like, that's all we need to know. We're going for adoption now.
Wow. You just said my favorite two words together in the history of ever, and that is but God. And I love but God stories because there can be it's such a pivotal moment when you encounter a challenge like that. And, you know, you're talking about it now, but I'm sure the emotional roller coaster that went along with that and the worry and the uncertainty and the fear and the pain, frankly, physical pain involved with medical procedures, trying to figure all of that out it was really difficult. Now, you did not adopt domestically. You adopted internationally from Taiwan. How did that happen?
We were actually getting our home study done, and we met a social worker who was going to adopt from Taiwan. We were kind of still maybe a little bit thinking of ourselves, but we really wanted to adopt a baby. We wanted to have that experience of having an infant. And so we didn't think international adoption would work for us because the babies usually were 1 or 2 years old before they were adopted. And we wanted to have that experience of an infant. And at the time, international adoption was pretty slow. China had slowed down and everything. But this social worker was telling us that she was adopting from Taiwan and her baby would be between 4 and 6 months old when she got her. And we were like, oh, that's really cool. And so we immediately jumped on the internet and found the adoption agency that she was using, and we signed up to adopt a baby from Taiwan. And it was I hear people's stories of their crazy long adoption processes. We were blessed with just a really quick process. We finished our home study in February, and in March of the next month we got our referral, and then by September, we were in Taiwan picking up our oldest son, who's now 16.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing, and sounds mm-hmm. definitely like a continuation of a but God story. Now, for people who maybe are not familiar with the adoption process, who this is all new language, you know, when you start to do this, you almost have your own language. You know, when you talk to other people who adopt and there's terms that you understand and processes that you know, that can really be overwhelming to other people. So you mentioned a couple of times a home study that you had to do. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, it's actually a very invasive process, I would say, where you spill your life out to a social worker. She comes to your house, she checks all of your safety information, she interviews family members, and she gets health reports. We have to have physicals, we have to show our checking accounts and our savings accounts, they have to verify our income with our employers, just to make sure that we are who we say we are and we're capable of doing that and of being able to be parents. And so it's a pretty long process. We were gung-ho for it, so we made it happen quickly. But it can take several months to get done. And you bare your soul to the social worker, and then they write up a report. It's usually, you know, 30 to 40 pages at least. And that is what you will send to the adoption agency. Sometimes the birth mother would see that, and that's how they decide who gets what baby and if you are capable for that baby.
You know, those words that you're saying, they sound very easy to understand. But if you break down that emotion there, first of all, I have to say how ironic that you studied social work in college and had this interaction with a social worker who was going to help mm-hmm. give you your baby. I think that's pretty amazing. But I think it's important for parents to understand who haven't adopted, if they know a family who's going through this. Like you just said, it's an extremely invasive process that parents who are having a child biologically do not have to go through. You know, if the people decide, okay, we want to have a baby, there's nobody who's going to come in and look and make sure, you know, do you have safety locks on all the doors and what is your past like? And writing a 30 to 40 page report on your past, I mean, that is a real sacrificial act of love to put yourself out there like that. And I think that's pretty amazing. Well, Jeff, I want you to take us to the moment that you and Abby get on the plane and you're going to Taiwan. What were your emotions like, and what was it like the first time you saw your son?
Oh, I am a crier. I have to.
I love it.
No shame if a good Hallmark commercial or something can get me teary-eyed. And so you had mentioned earlier about the when you sing Silent Night and the candles go up. I totally cry every year at that the same way. And so I was just a bundle of emotions. My wife was sort of the rock. And so we went to Taiwan, and it's the first time we'd ever been to Asia, and we had a guide who was so helpful, and she drove us to the adoption agency. It was about an hour and a half away from Taipei. And man, the moment that we laid eyes on him, we just melted. We kept a blog back in the day, and so we would update it every day, and people were following it and finding out. And my wife wrote a very cool blog post that day, and I'm going to tell you about it more when we get back.
Oh, I can't wait. Is this what happened on our 30th birthday? Is that what we're giving?
No, that's coming
that's
up.
That's coming up. We have so much good stuff coming up. Do not go away. We have some miracle stories coming up in this last segment. Don't go away. We'll talk more about adoption when we get back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. It's Jessica here bringing our A game. We have talked about Advent and we are talking about adoption. Now, November is Adoption Awareness Month, and on this last day, I didn't want to let it go by without giving a shout out to all of the families who share the love of God through adoption. It is not easy. It is not as glamorous as it looks at times, and it can be really a hard, long road, but one that is so worth the effort. We've been talking to Jeff Land, who is a children's pastor at Sugar Creek Baptist Church in Sugar Land, Texas. He and his wife are the authors of The Way to the Manger, a family Advent devotional. And before the break, we were talking about their journey with infertility and the Lord leading them to Taiwan to adopt a baby. And we ended a little bit on a cliffhanger there, Jeff. And so I want to take us back to that moment. Tell us about the first time you saw your son and your wife's post about it.
Well, it was such a crazy time. I was crying like crazy. And my wife, she says, you've got to hold it together. You're going to scare our son. But she was so in love with him. And we went back to the hotel and we're just staring at him basically for the next several days. But my wife woke up in the middle of the night because the time change is crazy. And she wrote this blog post, and I remember reading it, and it sticks out to me so much because she said, when I looked into his eyes, every tear, every struggle, every pain that I went through was worth it.
Oh.
Because I knew this was the child that God had for me. And I just have all... It's so true. Her words captured our feelings perfectly. If we had not had infertility, we would have had a biological child that I know we would have loved, but I cannot imagine being able to love a child more than we loved our son.
You know, I have not adopted, but I felt the same way even after I suffered a miscarriage and thinking, you know, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have my son if I hadn't had that. And I couldn't imagine my life without him. And just knowing that's so hard, though, sometimes, Jeff, to know mm-hmm. that God knows best, even in those difficult circumstances. Well, here's a little fun fact for you, Jeff. Actually, after it's been advertised, you know, that you're going to be on the show, I got a text from somebody that I went to high school with who became a missionary, was on the mission field in Ireland, who said, guess what? I was in the airport when they brought their son home. And that is Jimmy Earl. So, Jimmy, I know you're listening today.
Yeah, that is so funny. I was going to say that had to have been Jimmy Earl.
That's Jimmy Earl. Isn't that just such a wonderful little coincidence? And so now he's listening
that
to both
is.
Of us get to know each other. I love it. Well, the other cliffhanger we have is something big happened on Abby, your wife. Something happened on her 30th birthday. What happened?
Well, so we had decided as soon as we got home with Reed that we wanted to adopt a little girl. And so we thought we would have a boy and a girl. And you think with adoption, you kind of can decide those things. And so we immediately got back on. Our home study was still good, so we just had to update it real quick. We got on, we sent our money to our adoption agency, and nothing happened. And nothing happened, and then still nothing happened. And so we were getting frustrated, and we found out that our agency had actually lost their license to do Taiwan adoptions, and so it was just a real heartbreak. So it's Abby's 30th birthday, and I was getting ready to leave for work, and I said, I hope you have a great day. And she goes, well, the only thing that I really want, I'm not going to get. And I said, what's that? And she said, I'd really love for us to get a referral. And right now our home study is not even with an agency. I happened to know this person that I worked with who had found another agency that was doing adoptions in Taiwan. And I emailed this agency. And I emailed them with our home study. And about 2 hours later, I got a phone call from a social worker there. And she said, you know, Mr. Land, you sent us your home study, and we are doing adoption in Taiwan. We have a 2.5-year-old boy who needs a family, and your home study says for a girl, says for under 12 months, but we wanted you to have the opportunity to know you have this 2.5-year-old boy. And I said, you know, I think that right now we've been through all this waiting. I think we would be pretty good with a 2.5-year-old boy. And she said, well, there's one more thing you need to know. This little boy has a brother that was born yesterday, and he's also going to be part of this adoption. So you would be adopting a 2.5-year-old and an infant. And I said, well, you know, I can't commit to this over the phone without talking to my wife, but I feel like we'll probably do that. And so I hung up and I called Abby and I said, you know what you said you wanted for your 30th birthday? And she said, yeah. And I said, I think we're going to be able to get it. And she says, what do you mean you think? And I said, but it's two, not one. And so that is how we ended up with Nash and Will. And the interesting thing is that because Taiwan is 13 hours ahead of us, Will's birthday is April 29th, and my wife's birthday is April 29th. And so God gave her the desires of her heart on her 30th birthday.
Well, we have a problem here, Jeff, because I'm sitting across the table from my producer, Stephanie, and we're both crying, and we didn't refill the Kleenex box from yesterday. So I am just a little upset about that. But I hope that you heard what you said. I mean, I just listened to you say, Jeff, well, I happen to know someone else who did adoptions in Taiwan. That is just absolutely incredible. Well, that happened on her 30th birthday. What happened the next year on her 31st birthday? How do you top that?
Well, through that process of that year, our agency that we were using, this must be very common, they quit doing adoptions in Taiwan. But the missionary in Taiwan who was running the orphanage and I had become friends, and she I was actually doing home studies now because I was a licensed social worker in Texas on top
no
of being
way.
Working at Lifeway. And so I would write home studies, and I actually started facilitating adoptions for families who wanted to adopt from Taiwan. And so we just did them privately, which meant we could do them for much more affordable rates, so you weren't having to spend the tons of money that people were having to spend. So I would write the home studies, and then we would get them their babies from Taiwan. But on Abby's 31st birthday, it was a Sunday morning, and she came into the room and she goes, "I can't talk about this right now, but Deanna emailed me and Judy's pregnant." And I was like, "What?" And she said, Nash and Will's birth mother was pregnant, and she wanted us to adopt her baby. And so the email said, we're not exactly sure, but we're 95% it's a girl. By that time, it's girl or boy. We didn't care. And we actually weren't looking to adopt at all because we had three kids under three. And so, but we said, "You know, God, whatever it is, we'll do it." And so we did. We told her that we would adopt the baby, and a week later, they found out through another sonogram that it was definitely not a girl. It was a boy. And so that's how we ended up with our baby boy, Tuck.
Oh, that is so precious, though. I mean, what a great story, and what a full life. Now, Jeff, one of the things that you talked about, I do want to go back and revisit for a second, and that is the financial barriers. Because when parents are going to have a biological child, you worry about health insurance and buying a car seat and paying for school and all of those things, which you worry about too as adoptive parents. But cost can be a really big barrier. So what advice do you have for parents that want to adopt, but, you know, how do you navigate those financial pressures?
I would, if you are really feeling called to adopt, I first highly recommend adopting through the foster system. I think that America has many children who need homes, and they're babies up to 18 years old, and they need homes. And so if you're feeling called to adopt, I would strongly suggest that you adopt through the foster care system. And that is very minimal cost. And some states actually will continue to give you a stipend after you've adopted. If your kids go to school in-state, they give in-state tuition for college. And so those are some actual great benefits. But if you're not going to adopt from the foster care system and you are part of the faith community, a lot of times churches will help you with that cost, and they'll help you with fundraisers. We actually used an agency that would match our donations. And so we wrote letters to our friends and families and told them that we were adopting. And if they felt led, they could send money, get a tax-deductible receipt there, and this agency would actually match what we gave to them.
Well, God will make a way. If that child is destined to be in your family, God will make a way for that to happen. And I think it's helpful to hear some of those practical steps. And I love that you mention adopting kids out of the foster care system, because there is no shortage there. And, you know, Jeff, my primary area of expertise as a nurse scholar and my nursing professor role is actually human trafficking. And what we're seeing is that traffickers are now exploiting the foster care system because there are an abundance of kids. Most of them have some sort of vulnerability. And not only do you exploit them for financial gain, you get paid to do so. So that is something, you know, that we really need loving families to adopt kids. And I'll give a shout out really quick to the trust-based relational intervention method. This is was developed by Dr. Karen Purvis, and she has a center she's passed on now, but she has a center in her name at Texas Christian University. And we had a previous guest on named Shaylee Schneider, who is a TBRI, is what they call it, certified. And so if you're looking into that, just know that that's there, and you can go back and find that episode for the listeners. Now, Jeff, what would you say, having been through all of this, and you have four beautiful adopted children, no biological children, you still have that journey of infertility. What do you say to other families who are in that same boat as you? What encouragement do you give them?
I would definitely say don't give up and always expect God to do great things. I think that we never dreamed that we would have four sons through adoption that are from Taiwan. It's just four international adoptions is crazy, but God is bigger than that, and we can do great. He can do great things. So just, it's hard. Reach out to other people who are facing that. You don't really want to talk to a person that's able to have babies biologically when you're in the midst of that infertility. But also, don't lose hope. I remember my wife would still go to baby showers, and we were still happy for family and friends that were having babies. And just trust. I mean, it sounds easier. I mean, it sounds easier than what I'm saying, but it's just trust God and know that there's going to be some really down days. And there's going to be some real frustrations, but trust God, and He will provide.
Amen. He absolutely will. That is so true. And so much to unpack in each of those things that you say, because this is a long journey. I mean, this isn't something that happens quickly, like, oh, we were sad and then we weren't. You know, it's those things you have to get yourself, right? Grace and space.
Like, I know. And then when you're in the process and you've been matched with your child and you're not the one caring for your child, you're worried. You're like, what? Who are they with and how are they? So it's not.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That is really hard.
It's not fun until you get that baby in your hand. So it's very difficult.
Well, Jeff, as we close out our time together today, you know, your kids are getting older now, just like mine are. What do you love most about being a dad?
Oh, I love when they rely on me. I love when they ask me if I can help them do something. Now, I will say earlier this week, my 16-year-old sent me a text and said, do you think you can change the light bulb in my closet? And I said, I think I can teach you how to change the light bulb in your closet. But I do love caring for them, and I love taking care of them. And I would say that about my wife, too. She fixes them hot breakfast when they want it every morning, and she fixes their lunches, and she loves taking care of her boys. And I think together, that's one of the greatest joys that we get to do, is to care for them. But the best thing is when we saw all four of our boys give their hearts to Christ. And that's been the most gratifying thing, is to know that our children's eternity is safe.
Oh my goodness, what an inspiring way to end. Parents want nothing more than that, than to be with their children for eternity. It makes me think of the scripture, I have no greater joy than to know that my children are walking in truth. And thank you so much, Jeff, for sharing your adoption story, for sharing your Advent resource. This is it, called The Way to the Manger, a Family Advent Devotional by Jeff and Abby Land. And speaking of those resources, don't forget to check out AFA's Resource Center online. You can find some Christmas buttons. You can find my book, Behind Closed Doors, and all kinds of other Christmas gifts. And we'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.